Hi, I'm David Kaplan, and you're listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Enjoy the show. It's negative 200 degrees outside. There's a foot of snow on the way this week, and so let's talk baseball. White Sox have been one of the biggest players in this very slow offseason. So where do they stand with Manny Machado, and what about the rest of the team? Southsiders continue to build toward the playoffs. White Sox manager, our guy Ricky Renteria, is here in studio to join us. Hawks aren't a good team, and the Bulls, they're worse. 20 points worse. Jim Boylan's guys lose to a fellow cellar dweller as the rebuild continues to go off the rails. Are there any signs of improvement, or are they just getting worse? Mark Chynowski, hopefully, has some good news for us. And Chicago, meet Chuck Pagano. The Bears' new DC is introduced, and he does not plan to make too many changes. In fact, his goal is to make this defense the greatest in NFL history. So will he actually improve the league's best scoring defense? And welcome to Sports Talk Live, presented by our great partners with the Chevy Silverado. I'm David Kaplan. The panel for today's show. We have got Vinny Duver. He is from NBC Sports Chicago, the fine manager of the Chicago White Sox. Ricky Renteria is here. Hub Arkish, the brainchild of Pro Football Weekly. And our Chuck Garfine. All right, Ricky, it's freezing cold out. There's going to be a ton of snow, and we're talking baseball. How fired up are you?
Pretty fired up. I think everybody's getting excited about the upcoming season. I think the players are ready. They're chipping at, you know, biting at the bit, and I think this weekend should be a lot of fun for the fans and for the players.
You also have a very active general manager. We keep hearing how slow free agency is, but your club keeps making moves. That's got to make you happy.
No, we're very happy about, you know, the acquisitions that we made. You know, we've shored up a little bit of the bullpen. Even though we have some young men that have, you know, shown some signs of being able to carry the load on the back end of a ball game, and you know, we've got Yonder Alonso who's joining us, John Jay, McCann behind the plate to help Wellington, and you know, we're just continuing to shore it up also with the players that are within the organization, and hopefully some of the young men that everybody expects to see will be here soon.
Ricky, there seems to be a common theme amongst the additions. A lot of these guys are veterans, leaders. Was that by design to kind of have some guys who can help the young players who are here and who are coming acclimate and learn how to win in the majors?
Well, I think that Rick targeted guys that have had experience in high leverage type situations. We have guys that have been in the postseason. And I think that just by default, what they bring to the table, their way to prepare, how they go about viewing situations, things of that nature are going to help every player that we have on the club improve.
Ricky, obviously everybody's waiting breathlessly on Manny Machado. It's outside of your control. If he doesn't come, and I'm not saying he will or won't, how much better are you anyway?
We're still a lot better than we were a year ago. I think that the experience, first and foremost, for all the players that have been on the club last year, put them in a better position. I think they gained a lot of knowledge through their failures as well as their successes. You know, we had a tough season. The guys kept grinding. We did as much as we could to try to put us on a good footing. I think we are on good footing. Again, I think Rick's doing a nice job of the acquisitions that he's made, but I also want to reiterate that the players that we have that are coming from within the system, I think, are the big story. Obviously, an acquisition of a Manny Machado or a Harper who's out there would help, you know, expedite the timetable, but you can't win with just one guy. It takes a team to win, and so that's hopefully what we're trying to develop here, but, you know, certainly having one of those guys would help us.
Ricky, you keep talking about guys from within the organization, and Aloy Jimenez is one of those guys who's expected to arrive here next season. What have you seen of this guy do that's made you go, wow?
Well, I think everybody has seen his offensive prowess. I also think that he's continuing to improve his game defensively. I think he's a guy that's going to be an all-around type player. Impactful bat. I mean, unbelievable. When you talk to this young man, he's pretty advanced. He's pretty mature for his age, has a really good grasp of what he's out there to try to do. I think his approaches and his at-bats speak for themselves. You know, he had a little bit of a setback with a little injury this year, but continues to do things that are going to help him stay on the field. But certainly for us, we're just like everybody else with the fan base. We're excited about potentially having this young man with us sometime this year.
When you sit in a meeting with a guy like a Machado, what do you say in a meeting like that? Because he's going to get paid stupid money no matter where he goes. What do you say to try and tell him, hey, man, I know we weren't great last year, but we're coming?
Well, I think that the organization's depth spoke for itself. I think that Rick and the front office did a really nice job of putting together a presentation that showed him where we're at, where we're going, how he can impact us in a positive way, and also, you know, how we approach playing the game. You're going to be honest with these guys, because the reality is we got to deal with each other on a daily basis. This kid, when you sit down and talk to him, he's a pretty good kid. He has a desire and a look in his eye to want to win. So the skill set in and of itself speaks for itself. And I think that the biggest thing that we wanted to impart with him was who we are, where are we going, and we certainly feel that he can help us get to where we need to be.
Say you sign him, where is he going to play? Because that's a big question mark with him. He seems to prefer shortstop. The numbers say he's a better third baseman. How would you handle that?
I will say to you this, that this young man has said that he'll play wherever we need him to play to help us win. So I'm not worried about where he's going to play. He knows the makeup of the roster. He knows who we have on the field. I'll just leave it at that and say that this kid just wants to be a participant and will do whatever it takes to help a Major League Ball Club win championships.
Is there any concern with all the focus on him as to if he does come, how his teammates will react, or even if he doesn't come, how his teammates will react?
I think they're all professionals. I do think that as we continue to move forward, there are subtle conversations that are had to make sure that everybody understands where we're at. I think that everybody also understands the quality of player and the talent that he is. We have a lot of quality young men on this roster. I think they embrace anybody who wants to come in and give you what they have to help a team win. I think it'd be very easy to convince the totality of everything that's here that it's a good thing to have the type of talent that he brings to the table. Again, not taken away from any of the talent that we have within our system and on the roster, on the field today.
You've signed John Jay. Mm-hmm. It's his best friend. You get his brother-in-law in Yonder Alonso, who's a very good player.
Yeah.
I think upgrades you at first base defensively. Will you sign his tailor or his driver?
you know, it's interesting. I've been asked this question quite a bit for the last few days. I don't want to minimize in any way, shape, or form who these guys are as quality Major League Baseball players. One of our own guys internally said, you know, hey, did you mention to him that you're signing Yonder? Hey, Yonder, can you do something with Manny? No, Yonder's Yonder, and John Jay is John Jay. In and of themselves, these two young men are putting together a solid major league career. So we have acquired two really good baseball players that they happen to be in some way, shape, or form related, one through a marriage and another through lifelong friendship. You know, happens to just be a part of of what happens. But these are two players that have shown that they're capable of performing at the major league level, high levels.
If they were bad players, you wouldn't have signed them because they're close to this kid.
No, I think that you're looking for quality anywhere you can get it. And I think that these two young guys bring some experience and quality to them in different facets of the game.
Go ahead, Chuck.
I was going to say, there are multiple connections with guys. Wellington Castillo played with Machado in Baltimore. But he was a signing last year. That was the big free agent signing. Obviously, he had the PED suspension. Mm-hmm. We didn't really get to see what he could bring to this team.
Yeah.
What do you want to see from Wellington Castillo here in 2019? Because that's a big job that he's got.
Yeah, it's a big job. I think he and McCann will be able to handle that. But I knew Wellington a few years back when he was just, you know, starting out and evolving and developing on the north side. This kid can really play. He can swing the bat. He knows how to handle pitchers. I think he's got one of the quickest release still, even today, of any catcher in the big leagues. I want him to be healthy and be himself. I don't want him to do more than he's capable of doing. He wants to play every single day. And it's one of those things where, thankfully, you know, even last year the guys, they were able to pick up the pace and help each other out. We got to balance it out so we can keep him in the lineup as often as possible and maximize what he's capable of doing. He is a solid major league catcher and offensive player.
He signed here because of you. That's what he said. I'm sure the contract helped too, but you had a big reason why he signed with the White Sox.
I'll say that's flattering, but I think that this young man also saw and continues to see where we're going as an organization. I think those are things that players look at, I believe. If they can be a part of something that could potentially be special. It's happened on the north side. It's happened in a lot of different organizations. Houston went through it. A lot of clubs have gone through this. Hopefully we're on the precipice of being a part of that type of system.
You know, Ricky, it seems like just yesterday, certainly Jimenez and Mankato, but all the excitement was about the young arms that Rick acquired in the beginning of this process. How soon is help coming there? How ready are some of these kids?
Well, I think that guys that we have within the system, Dylan Cease is a guy that kind of doesn't get talked about a whole lot, but he's pretty good. And I think that he's one of the guys, along with Kopech, once Kopech comes back from this, the setback, is going to be a fine major league pitcher, starting rotation, top of the line guy. We're close. We're really close with these guys. And so we're very excited about where we're at. The footing that we have now established, the organization has established, that Rick and the front office have worked to acquire, we're getting close. And I think it's just now experience, just time and experience.
Something that I love that you do is you hold your players accountable. And if they don't hustle down at first, Ricky Renteria is not going to tolerate that. But we don't see that in every organization. How do you handle that and yet get these guys to play as hard as they do for you?
It's not personal. I try to make sure that they understand that it's not about me. We have a way of playing the game. I think there's an energy level that you need to be able to exude on a daily basis. Granted, you're playing a 162-game schedule. You're in spring training for 7-8 weeks. It's a long season. It's one of the longer seasons in sports. So you've got to be able to understand and manage where they're at physically on a daily basis and when they can give me everything that they have. I certainly need them to be on the field more than not. I don't want them to put themselves in a position where they cause injury to themselves. And I also need to know, and I also know that there are times when you have to play with aches and pains. They know it. We've all lived it. We've experienced it. They have to be smart about the way they go about playing the game of baseball. But there is a level of effort that you've got to give on a daily basis. I think the fans deserve it. I think as a professional, they need to do that to accommodate who they are as a major league player. But more than that, represent the Chicago White Sox in a way that, you know, everybody will be happy about what they're trying to do.
When you met with Machado, was that Johnny Hustle thing water under the bridge at that point? Or did you want to communicate with him just to see what he meant by those comments?
I'll just keep it brief. It was addressed. It was asked about that comment. When you listen to this young man, maybe it was taken out of context or he misspoke. The reality is, when you look at this kid in his eyes, this kid wants to play. He wants to perform. He wants to go out and help a major league ball club. He knows where I stand. We talked about it at length with everybody that was there. It's not about me. This isn't about me, patting myself on the back or, you know, wringing my chest. This is about us just making sure that we communicate with the player and get the most out of him that we possibly can, and that they feel that they're in an environment which allows them to express their physical skills to the best of their ability while maintaining a professionalism about how they go about doing their business. Yeah, they know. He knows I've pulled players. We talked about it. We've pulled players, any number of players during the season. But not because that's what I want to do. I think there are times when as we move forward, I'll want to have a conversation as opposed to just yanking a guy. And I want my players to talk to each other. I want my players to talk to the guy that doesn't do something and maybe say, hey, listen, White Sox, we don't play that way. We play this way. And maybe that's what's ultimately going to be where we're headed. And I think the guys are starting to get that. I think they understand that it's not about me. The game is about them. The game is about the players. It always will be. It's just us maximizing what they're capable of doing and laying out a structure that says this is what the White Sox do.
I just heard Bill Belichick say what you just said. He goes, if I have to get involved in disciplining a player, we got big troubles. Yeah. He said, my veterans, he said, on a veteran team, when it's ready to win, the veterans police everything. I don't have to get involved.
Yeah, and I think that's the truth.
Ricky, how excited are you about the two new pieces at the back end of your bullpen? That's got to make your job easier, I would imagine.
Absolutely. You know, Colomé and Herrera have done it. They've got the experience. And it takes a mentality, you know, a solid mentality to be able to both have the success and then deal with the failures that have come in those particular situations. But they also give me a tremendous flexibility. You know, we've used our bullpen in many different ways over the last couple of years. You guys have heard me say that I need outs, and I want my pitchers to get me outs. There might be a situation which most people might consider not the appropriate to use a particular individual, but that might be the game. And that also is an evolving aspect of my game in terms of how I use my bullpen. But would it be nice to use a guy in the seventh, eighth, and ninth? Absolutely. Would I love to do that? No doubt about it. But what happens when I use that role for three games? And all of a sudden I've used these three guys, and on the fourth day I've got to close out a game. Do I throw those guys back out there? And I know that they're probably not at their best because I've used them 3 days in a row. I've got to find a way to use the other guys and be able to give them the strength and the confidence to be able to maximize what they're capable of doing in those situations as well. That's why we allow them and have them experience those things and give them the trust that they need in order to be able to accomplish those feats.
Ricky, I thought it was interesting. We each at the top threw in a Machado question. Mm-hmm. It didn't go unnoticed. You slipped a Harper in there. Hope, still possibilities.
Well,
what do you think's going on?
I just think that those are the two young men that are out there right now that everybody, you know, is obviously interested in. I'm not saying that there's still hope. I'm saying that anything is possible. I do think that the organization, the front office, everybody has done their best to present a united front in terms of who we are as an organization. I told Rick, man, if I was on the other side of the table, I had a sign, you know.
Maybe both of them will be at the convention tomorrow.
But, you know, those two young men have a tremendous decision to make because they're talking about an extended period of time in which they're looking to be a part of an organization. But they also need to want to be a part of an organization. And we want if they want to be a part of the organization, we want them to be here. And we welcome them. So there's a lot of hope still left for any number of options. And hopefully, you know, even if that doesn't happen, we're in a good, really good place.
Are you surprised that there's 60, 70 quality major league players still looking for jobs?
Yeah, you know, we were just talking about that off the camera a little earlier. You know, the dynamic of the availability of free agents in the market today is changing. You know, obviously.
Crazy.
I think a lot of clubs like us who have so much youth evolving and developing and on the cusp of being at the major league level, it kind of puts a back burner on trying to acquire too many guys that are out there on the free agent market. Now, that being said, if we're on that position, and Rick has talked about this a lot, if we're in a position where we're getting ready to strike, they're willing to go out and do something that will help us put us over the top.
Do you also anticipate Jose Abreu being a long-term piece going forward? I know his contract's up, I think, after next year.
You know, Pito wants to be a lifelong White Sox, and he continues to work toward that goal. I can't tell you the future, but I know that he is a piece that does a lot for us. He certainly turned himself into a quality all-star first baseman, has always hit. He takes care of himself. There's nothing that says he won't be able to carry himself for a long time.
We were talking before about how during the Machado visit, who was there to talk to him? But
yeah.
It was Jose Abreu.
Yeah.
You said those two spoke for a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know if you were even a part of that conversation, but what do you think that conversation was like between those two in that situation, as I'm sure Abreu wants Machado to be a teammate of his?
Sure. It's like I mentioned before, players talk amongst themselves. You know, anybody that plays a game knows that players talk amongst themselves, and they talk about not just, you know, hi, how you doing? They talk about, hey, how's the team? What is the coaching staff like? What are your teammates like? Things of that nature. I think that Pito being there put a personal touch to it. I'm sure he was able to have a conversation. As we were sitting there, I'll share a little bit. We were all three of us were sitting there, and they were conversing, and I was in the room as the conversations were going on. And it was just a very, you know, a give and take, a little bit of just getting to know each other. And as the conversation continued to evolve, I could see that they were more enveloped in conversations, and I wanted to give them time to get to know each other. Mm-hmm. So I left. I left and let them continue to talk, and then I met them later on. I actually met Manny later on when we all came together to sit down with his representation. And I mean, I think that conversation went very, very well, from what I gather. And so we'll see how it continues to go.
How much does the ability to speak Spanish, a lot of managers can't, and they deal with players and they can't communicate they would like to. How much of an advantage is that for you?
It's an advantage to be able to speak Spanish. I think, and I always try to make sure that I explain this or articulate it as well as I possibly can. It's not only speaking the language, because I could speak English, and you've heard me say this before, mm-hmm. I can speak English and Spanish, but if I don't have a message, if it's not clear, if it's not articulated well, it doesn't work. So it's beyond just the language, it's the message. And hopefully, in both languages, I'm able to present something that they can take a hold of, you know, gravitate to, and then run with. I certainly couldn't do it if I didn't hadn't been brought up this way. But speaking Spanish and trying to make sure that I understand the different words that I need to use, key words that I need to use in order for them to grasp what I'm trying to talk about, it takes a little work, but it's definitely paid huge dividends.
Last thing. You guys took a lot of your American prospects yep. to the DR last week. I've never heard of an organization doing this. Yep. Brought them down there and said, I want you to understand what your Latin teammates go through to get here. Mm-hmm. You didn't have to do that. I thought that was a magnificent idea.
It was a great idea. Getze talked about it. You know, the year previous, we had sent, I think, 4 or 5 Americans to be a part of the Instructional League down there. Mm-hmm. This year they made it a prospect camp that they took down there to experience everything that's going on. You know, they visited an orphanage. They were able to get out there and be in the community, in the Latin community. I do think that it's important for everybody to understand that everybody's trajectory and path is different. There are difficulties that people experience that might be a little different than yours. But at the end of the day, we have a commonality to us. The beauty of the game of baseball is what's bringing us all together in this particular instance, and I think these guys appreciated it, and I think that the people there appreciated that they went and shared themselves with them. So it kind of served two things, you know, and I think it was a great outreach. I thought Getze did a nice job of putting that all together, and the staff that went down there. It was a great idea, and I think it's something that we're going to continue to do.
We're rooting for you, man.
Thank you. Thank you.
Best to you.
Thank you.
You got it. There you go. There he is, Ricky Renteria. Remember, we have the opening night of Sox Fest completely covered if you can't be there in person. Starts at 4 with live coverage of the opening ceremony. 5:30, I'll host Sports Talk Live on location at Sox Fest. Scheduled to join us, Don Cooper, Lucas Giolito, Tim Anderson, Yalmer Sanchez. Then at 6, we'll bring in the seminar featuring Rick Hahn and Rick Renteria. That's tomorrow on NBC Sports Chicago and streaming on the My Teams app. All right, the Bulls fired Fred Hoiberg after 24 games. Now, 24 games later, we miss the Hoiball era. Bulls get blown out by another cellar-dwelling team, and the numbers say they're getting worse. Mark Schanowski here to discuss the latest in the NBA next.
Get all of your Blackhawks news in the palm of your hand with the My Teams app by NBC Sports. The best place to stream the games, watch highlights, read articles, and more. Download the My Teams app today.
I judge this thing on how we practice and how we play. I don't judge it on what we lose by, okay? We can win by 20 at Cleveland or whatever it was, 16, 14. And I thought we made a lot of mistakes with 18 turnovers and didn't play very well. So I'm not judging everything on the final score. Obviously, that's important, and we'd like to win games, of course. But that's not what this is. That's not what is on my mind.
It's a really good thing Jim Boylan doesn't judge his team by the final score, because the numbers have been awful. Check out the stat of the day, driven by our Chevy Silverado. Bulls have played 48 games this season, 24 under Hoiberg, 24 under Boylan. Boylan has one more win than Fred did. That's the only stat, though, that's better. Scoring, offensive rating, defensive rating, assist percentage, turnover percentage, and pace, all worse under Jim Boylan. And with that, Mark and Luke are here to talk. And I might add, Jim has had better talent to utilize because when Fred got fired, there was no Portis, no Dunn, no Markkanen, all out with injury.
Yeah, they were just getting back at that time. And, you know, right now, you're almost splitting hairs to say that they're worse under Boyle than they were under Fred. I mean, they just don't have an identity. You know, and watching these games, their defense has really fallen off over the last month, and that was supposed to be Jim Boylan's calling card. If you're going to play at a slower tempo, you have to be able to stop the other team to stay in games. And right now, it's usually just one thing or the other. If they're not playing well defensively, you know, it's going to be a big problem the rest of the way.
Mark, here's the issue I'm having, all right? We just spent 15 minutes with Ricky Renteria. I could not have been more impressed. Not because he's a nice guy, but what he had to say. Mm-hmm. I listened to Jim Boylan, and it's hard to take him seriously sometimes. And maybe it's just me.
I'm right there with
you. That's kind of the way he comes across.
Well, he kind of comes across as an old school, like a high school coach, mm-hmm. trying to fire people up with a lot of cliches, and we got to play harder, and we got to do this better. But there's not a lot of strategy involved with it. You don't really hear a grand plan for how are we going to do things. I think the fan base would like to see the team play faster, and that's something they've indicated they're going to do. But at the same time, you know, you lose Wendell Carter Jr. for the rest of the season, and he was really a big part of their defensive strategy, a guy that can really move well at 6'10 with a 7'4 wingspan. He kind of anchored their defense. Now that's gone. We haven't seen the growth that we had hoped to see in Lauri Markkanen in year two of his career, and they still don't know whether Chris Dunn is the point guard long term. So there are a ton of questions with this team. They have to hope to get good luck in the lottery, because if you get that first pick, whether you use that for Zion Williamson or use that in a trade, that can set you up for a summer that can transform the franchise. But you can't count on lottery luck, especially with the reform in the lottery act.
Before we continue, I want to play something from Zach LaVine. Today was asked about the style of play of the Bulls so far under Jim Boylan.
You know, Atlanta, bottom five team just like us, we shouldn't get blown out, you know, by them at all. So they're out there moving the ball, playing well with pace, and you know that's what we should be looking like, and we have to get to that.
Are you guys still buying what Jim is selling, in your estimation?
We got to. He's the coach. You know, we're going out there and we got to play. You know, I think, you know, above everything, we got to go out there and play for ourselves and you know what we represent as well, because you know we're going out there getting blown out doesn't help any of our you know our stock either. So. You know, we got to go out there and play together.
So if guys are talking about we've got to, and they're thinking about their own stock, how does this affect free agency when it comes around? If he's your head coach and you say he's going to be your head coach again around the rest
There's
of the
no
NBA.
No shot he's back here. You cannot bring him back.
They've said he's coming back.
No shot.
Well, that was the plan originally. When John Paxson
it could have changed
the media,
by now.
Said the plan is for him to come back. But because they're only obligated for $1 million for next season, they could easily decide to move on and bring in another coach. And we'll see how they play over the final 34 games of the season. But, you know, I was in the arena yesterday, and this was a lifeless bunch. They fell behind 26-9 to a very bad Atlanta team. And there was just no effort. You know, on the defensive end, you saw guys standing around while the Hawks were just sending guys to the offensive boards, getting second and third chance opportunities. Atlanta was having fun. They were playing at a fast pace, and the Bulls were just left stuck in the mud. We've seen throughout the season there's very little enthusiasm on the bench. A timeout, guys don't run out and slap hands and try to encourage their teammates. It's a lifeless team right now, and that's always a bad reflection on the head coach.
We were just talking about another rebuilding team, the White Sox. I mean, mm-hmm. the win-loss record wasn't pretty there last season either, but there were a lot of positives that they could trumpet, be it in the minor leagues or with a few guys on the major league roster. What was the progress that John Paxson in the front office was expecting to see when the season began?
Well, I remember back on media day, John Paxson got in front of the media group and said that we're healthy and we're too deep at every position, and they were excited about the prospects for the season, seeing the development with the young players. Well, immediately, Lauri Markkanen gets hurt in the third training camp practice and misses the first 2 months of the season. And in the first 2 weeks of the year, both Chris Dunn and Bobby Portis go out with fairly serious knee sprains. So the roster was decimated right from the start. Fred took the fall for that. They decided to slow down the tempo and try to emphasize the fact that we'll play slower to keep us in games. Going through a rebuild, you want to see progress from year to year. We haven't seen it with Markkanen. We haven't seen it with Dunn. I think Zach LaVine has looked pretty good this year. You know, he's fully recovered from the ACL tear, and he's a high-volume scorer, which I know that some fans don't fully appreciate how hard it is to score 23 points a game that like he does. He has some flaws in his game, but I think we've seen some growth in Zach LaVine. I think that's definitely a positive. Wendell Carter showed that he can be a part of this in the 44 games that he played. But they have a lot of positions that they need to fill, and I think the jury's still out on some of the guys on the roster. A lot of the guys.
Do you get any sense that the complete confidence that appears to be given to Pax and Gar could be slipping at all with the Reinsdorfs?
I have seen no indication to that. Mm-hmm. It seems like the Reinsdorfs are 100% behind both John Paxson and Gar Forman. I would not anticipate any changes to the front office. I think what you might see is trying to make a bold move on the roster this summer. And that's why this lottery is so important. If you could somehow win the lottery and get the first pick, you might be able to swing a trade for an Anthony Davis. And then if you get Anthony Davis, maybe that opens doors somewhere else. They need something good to happen to the franchise, much like in 2008 when they beat the odds and got Derrick Rose.
But we normally suggest to people, don't plan your future on the lottery.
That's right.
That is correct.
Yeah, there are people all over this world that have tried to get lucky in the lottery. But yeah, I mean,
I still play Mega Millions. I still play Mega Millions, regular basis. Yeah, you never know.
I'll be doing the show tonight unless.
Unless I win the Mega Millions.
In terms of salary cap, where are they going into this offseason? There's been a lot of different reports. They won't pick up Jabari's $20 million option. So how much cap space will they have?
Right now they're looking at about $40 million, and that does not include a cap hold that's placed on Bobby Portis. He's going to be a restricted free agent. But until they either renounce his rights or he signs with another team, they have a figure on their books for Portis. But they could decide if they found interest from a couple of big free agents, they could renounce the rights to Portis and they could increase that amount of money. They could also make some trades between now and then, which would free up cap space. But at the very least, they have the ability to sign a max-level free agent and then potentially a second-level guy. So they can do some things in free agency. They just have to make sure they can find some interest.
Okay, so let me just paint a rosy scenario.
Okay, I like that idea.
Okay, they win the lottery. They are going to have the number one pick. Mm-hmm. They package that number one pick with whoever, Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, Wendell Carter, something, and they get Anthony Davis. Mm-hmm. They have a ton of cap space. They renounce the rights to Portis, and they sign Kawhi Leonard.
Well, that's the dream scenario. I mean, if you could somehow pull that up, all of a sudden, Pax and Gar look like executives of the year instead of people that the fan base is unhappy with. But
frozen ping pong ball like they did for Ewing.
You know, it happens usually about once every 10 years where there's this transcendent personality. And I'm not 100% convinced that Zion Williamson is going to be the next franchise changer in the NBA. He's a great dunker, great shot blocker, but he's 6'7", 285 pounds. He could turn out to be a guy like Rodney Rogers, who came into the league with a lot of fanfare.
Or it could be Charles Forrest,
right?
Or it could be Barkley.
Well, you'd take Barkley, that's for sure.
By the way, I did see Kawhi Leonard just bought a $13 million house in Southern California. So maybe he likes California more than he likes Chicago.
Let's say he bought a home in Lake Forest.
Oh, no, yeah. Now we'd have a story.
Just buy Michael's mansion, still available.
Still available at a good price, yeah.
And get him a deal on that thing.
Yeah, I mean, the rest of the year they're going to have to try to make some decisions on a few guys. I think the real key right now is Chris Dunn and Bobby Portis. So those two guys are going to be part of the future. And right now the jury's out on Chris Dunn. He's been hurt a lot during his Bulls career. He's been plagued by careless turnovers at times, and he's not a good outside shooter. In today's NBA, the point guard is such a crucial position, and most point guards around the league now are guys who can get you 18 to 20 points. And Chris Dunn's not a three-point shooter
okay,
at all.
Okay, let's talk about James Harden. Mm-hmm. Hit 61 the other night. He's ridiculous. This guy is by far the MVP. It's not even going to be a battle, but how good is James Harden?
Yeah, a lot of times when a guy wins the MVP award, you can kind of cross him off for the next season because voters don't like to give it to the same guy 2 years in a row. But what he's doing right now with this Houston team, Chris Paul's been out for almost a month now because of a hamstring injury. They just lost Clint Capella to a hand injury, and he's carrying that group. And they got off to a slow start, but now they're fourth in the West, and Harden is doing it all by himself. The guy's amazingly durable for the amount of hits that he takes throughout the course of the game. And his ability to score one-on-one, you know, he's gotten this amazing streak where he's made an incredible amount of baskets with no one assisting him. He's doing it all by himself, playing one-on-one
without
basketball.
One basket assisted.
No one's, it's not like they're running him off screens and he's doing catch and shoot things. He's creating this all on his own.
He does travel on every play.
Well, he does that a lot.
So there's that.
It drives Kendall Gill crazy every time he sees the double step back three. But he's turned that into an art form, and guys are trying to perfect that. Steph Curry tried that a few weeks ago. He got called for traveling. He's like, well, they never called that on Harden, but Harden is perfected. He's kind of got that slide step that referees let him get away with.
He's playing incredible basketball. Absolutely incredible. I've never seen anything.
Because you would have thought that Giannis in Milwaukee would have had a good chance carrying that team up
to
the top of the East. But the way Harden is playing right now, you're right. I think he's the odds-on favorite to make it 2-0.
He's 1-5 now in Vegas.
Really?
not even close anybody else. Victor Oladipo goes down yesterday.
Oh, that was horrible to see.
Horrible injury and a tore quad, and that's a tough one to come back from.
Yeah, you mentioned Charles Barkley. He had that injury. Tony Parker had that injury, and they weren't quite the same after that. Of course, you know, they suffered those injuries later in their careers, but you could see when the trainers came out, they knew it was serious right away. And Oladipo's a guy that was the second pick in the draft, and, you know, when he was in Orlando and Oklahoma City, people were kind of like, well, there's not enough here. And then he went to Indiana in the Paul George trade, and he transformed himself into a 24-point-a-game scorer. He was an all-star last year, was on his way to another all-star berth this season. And, you know, a guy who works that hard and puts so much into his game, you just hope that he can come back 100% from that injury and get to back to where he was, because he had taken an Indiana Pacers team. When you look at the roster, you're thinking, well, this isn't really a great team, but they won 48 games last year, and they had a better record than Boston. So they were continuing to put together a great season, and it was mostly because of Oladipo.
Yeah, what a player. Very sad to see. Well, thanks again for your
time. All right, yeah, we'll see what happens tomorrow night, the L.A. Clippers in town. Keep an eye on Tobias Harris, because that could be a target.
He could be a bull. Yeah. Because they get Kawhi, they'll renounce his rights.
We're going to have a video breakdown very shortly on our website and on the My Teams by NBC Sports app, looking at the strengths of Tobias Harris and how he might project as a bull.
Or maybe we can get Chris Middleton here.
He's another guy. He's in that second tier behind those top five or six guys.
All right, we'll see. We can dream, Rick, can't we?
Well, you talking about Anthony trading for Anthony Davis. That'd be the number one option.
Get it done. All right, Chuck Pagano, welcome to Chicago. Bears' new DC meets the media. Says if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Can he make the league's top scoring defense even better?
For Chicago Sports Talk with Sizzle, crank up the heat and turn on STL. Host David Kaplan brings his no-nonsense opinion to the table every weeknight on the topics that are trending with our teams. Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado, weeknights at 6 on NBC Sports Chicago.